efforts to prosecute some of those responsible for the brutal conflicts in the former Yugoslavia received a boost in September 2002, when one of the highest-ranking suspects, a former president of the Bosnian Serb Republic, entered a guilty plea. Biljana Plavsic admitted that she had known about and encouraged violence by Serbs against Muslims and Croats. Supporters of the court hailed the admission as vindicating its existence, though critics still accuse it of bias and dispensing victor's justice.
Meanwhile, the court grapples with a particularly high-profile defendant, the former Yugoslav leader Slobodan Milosevic. Reporting from The Hague, Alistair Wanklin looks at a day in the life of the tribunal.
Can you place that on the overhead projector, tab 43?
It's year two, and prosecutors continue to present documents and witnesses in the trial of Slobodan Milosevic.
Notwithstanding this ceasefire agreement, was Dubrovnik shelled thereafter and into...
Here, the prosecutor is examining whether Milosevic had a hand in ordering the siege of Dubrovnik, an ancient coastal town in Croatia that the Yugoslav National Army shelled heavily in 1991 and 1992. The team has brought to The Hague the then mayor of Dubrovnik, Pero Poljanec. He says the shelling killed civilians and destroyed homes and the town's water supply. The prosecutor asks whether the attackers perhaps didn't appreciate the effect the assault was having.
To what extent must the JNA have been aware of the situation in the town and of the number of people defending it?
The JNA was aware of each and every detail happening in town. First of all, because they had visual contact with the town, they were only a couple of hundred meters away. Secondly, they were informed. Thirdly, we had...
Sitting in the courtroom listening to this is Slobodan Milosevic. He replies through the interpreter that he never ordered Dubrovnik's destruction. He says he knew and loved the place and is on record as having condemned the assault.
Question, all right, very well, Mr. Poljanec. I did like having my holidays in Dubrovnik, as you know. During the events when the first news of them reached me, I was in The Hague at the time, and I condemned any and all violence in the area of Dubrovnik.
But Milosevic may have said one thing in public. His administration was keeping the siege alive, according to the mayor of Dubrovnik. Poljanec describes why he thinks this so by relating a phone conversation with a Croatian minister he'd had on the day the siege ended.
And I told him what the situation was like in town, and quite literally that this would perhaps be our last conversation because we expected that to die. All of us thought we would die in the town. The whole town was in flames. And Dr. Sheparovic answered, stick it out a little while longer. I've just been on the line with Mr. Federico Maior in Paris. That was the number one man in UNESCO there, who told me that he had been given guarantees from the very top echelons of leadership in Belgrade that everything would be over by 4 p.m., and that's what happened. Not a single grenade fell after 4 p.m. on that particular day, which just shows that it was impossible that Belgrade did not know about it.
It's well known how long it took for prosecutors here in The Hague to battle with the Yugoslav leadership to get Slobodan Milosevic extradited. Now, 4 kilometres from the court, outside which I'm now standing, is the prison where 45 individuals are now being held. So things are improving, but still the tribunal suffers from an image problem in the Balkans. Zarina Suvakovica is a writer at the Daily Politica newspaper in Belgrade. She says it's still common for people there to raise questions over the court's legitimacy.
I don't think that the tribunal is seen by majority of people in Yugoslavia as an institution of truth and reconciliation. Maybe if the nowadays politicians and political leaders had a more positive stand about tribunal, maybe it will change in a while. But one of the main reasons why Yugoslav people do not really accept the Hague Tribunal is that because they still think it's prosecuting majority of Serb leaders and none of the other nations' leaders.
And it's not only in the Balkans that influential figures criticize the court's existence. In Western Europe, too, there are high-profile critics who describe it as just another example of a victor dispensing one choice of justice. In London, Lord Peter Carrington was British Foreign Minister during the Bosnian conflict. Carrington worked hard on the ground and elsewhere to halt it, but he says he now has no affection for the tribunal. If he were summoned to give evidence, he says he would refuse to go.
I think what you have to avoid is victor's justice. And I think there is an element of that at the moment. I mean, frankly, Milosevic, who was not a particularly agreeable character, was no worse than Tudjman, the president of Croatia, who was just as responsible for what went on as Milosevic. Luckily for Tudjman, in a way, he's dead. But if he'd not been dead, I cannot imagine that the tribunal, as he was then president of Croatia, would have called him in front of them. And I think there's an element of victor's justice in it, which I find rather disagreeable.
Nevertheless, the Hague Tribunal exists, and with several dozen suspects in trial or awaiting proceedings to begin. So there is sufficient support and cooperation for it to be producing results. And no result has been more welcome than the admission of guilt by a high-ranking suspect, former president of the Bosnian Serb Republic, Biljana Plavsic. In an emotional speech at her sentencing, she admitted having supported ethnic cleansing.
Our leadership, of which I was a necessary part, led an effort which victimized countless innocent people.
For the tribunal, this admission was an important achievement. Spokesman Jim Landale says the guilty plea gave further justification to the tribunal's efforts to seek the truth.
For the first time, you have an individual who once held very high office amongst within the Bosnian Serb political leadership saying that, yes, we were responsible, are responsible for the horrific crimes that were committed against the non-Serb population in the war in Bosnia. There has been a lot of, or many attempts at denying that the crimes even took place or that there was any responsibility from the leadership higher up the chains of command for those crimes. For the first time, this has been challenged and been challenged by someone as significant as Biljana Plavsic.
Yes, Mr. Rossi.
How much time do I have, Mr. May?
As the Slobodan Milosevic trial continues, observers reflect that this is the highest profile procedure the tribunal is likely to handle. So it shows up the court's strengths and weaknesses. One of the problems is apparent in the way Milosevic is able to poke fun at the process. Milosevic chose to be his own defense counsel, so in effect has all the time he likes to deliver diatribes or simply play to the cameras.
So all these dramatic events and all the drama that you have described, this took place...
The judge, Richard May, frequently tells Milosevic to either come to the point or to shut up.
Do you happen to have read that? Answer no.
We've been through this with a previous witness. We've ruled that it's irrelevant, but let us move on.
I think the Milosevic case particularly is very important for the tribunals because of the new court.
This is Chris Stevens, an analyst with the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. He says the Milosevic trial is closely watched by those states unsure about the idea of the new International Criminal Court.
Because the new court, unlike the old court, doesn't have support. Russia, China, and particularly America... are not members and don't want to see it really operating. So the big powers are, if you like, split. And the new court, the ICC, which is also in The Hague, is also looking to the Milosevic trial, hoping that it will be what they call a good, clean fight. It's not just a question of whether he's going to go to jail. Of course he'll go to jail. What they want to demonstrate is that the process works, that it was a clean trial, that the evidence was overwhelming and was well put together. And I think the worry is that the public perception is that Milosevic seems to be making a mockery of the trial.
But some credit the Yugoslav tribunal for its painstaking work in gathering evidence. Even sceptics agree that the hearings are a detailed record of what did take place in the Balkan turmoil. This is valuable, according to some observers internationally. At the Royal Institute of International Affairs in London, analyst Sir Tim Garden says the tribunal will confound its critics.
For many, the process has been a bit too slow, and certainly bringing to justice people has proved more difficult than I think we had expected. But in a way, that shows that the balance is perhaps about right, that everybody is ensuring that real evidence is brought to bear, and that people who do horrific acts, even in war, can't escape from the consequences of their actions ultimately.
So if the Yugoslav Tribunal, and that for Rwanda, are proving so successful, will it follow that support strengthens now for the new International Criminal Court? After all, the United States is one heavyweight so far to resist it.
The big problem, as we all know, is that the United States is most unenthusiastic about the thought of being subject to some supranational system. But I think even the United States will find in the end that it'll be better to be part of it than sitting on the sidelines.
Thank you, Mr. Pilanic. You'll be asked some further questions.
You're welcome.
For the time being, the work of the Yugoslav Tribunal continues. Several criminals have been convicted, several suspects released, and more remain in jail awaiting the process to start. Already, the International Criminal Court is in existence, although it doesn't yet have judges or even a building. But some say its first work could involve Venezuela if the situation there descends into civil conflict. Both government and opposition could find themselves facing indictments, as Venezuela is one of the 70-odd nations that have signed the court statute. For Common Ground, I'm Alistair Wanklin in The Hague.